Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, Trump heads to trial. The date of his first criminal case now set as a judge shoots down efforts to delay it yet again. The former president, though, also scoring an important lifeline today. Plus, breaking news, federal agents descending on at least two homes of rapper Sean Diddy Combs. Just what would Homeland Security be looking for? And a special report tonight on how one of Elon Musk's companies is helping Russians on the battlefield. Let's go out front. Good evening, I'm Erica Hill, in for Aaron Burnett. Out front tonight, denied. A federal judge rejecting Donald Trump's efforts to further delay what will be his first criminal trial and the first ever for a former president of the United States. The so-called hush money case is now slated to start 3 weeks from today on April 15th.
I don't know how you can have a trial that's going on right in the middle of an election. Not fair. Not fair.
Well, today was certainly a blow to Team Trump's time-trusted legal strategy of attack and delay. The judge in the case really laying into Trump's attorneys for making what he called incredibly and unbelievably serious allegations without the evidence to back them up, saying, quote, "You're literally accusing the Manhattan DA's office and the people assigned to this case of engaging in prosecutorial misconduct and of trying to make me complicit in it, and you don't have a single cite to support that position." The judge clearly familiar with Trump's tactics and also ready to get this case started. And it may be the only criminal trial Donald Trump faces before the election. Here are the other three at play right now. There is, of course, the classified documents case in Florida, which was supposed to begin in May, but the judge has said she's now considering a new date. In Georgia, the election subversion case is slated to begin in August. That date, though, also in jeopardy. And the January 6th case is on hold at the moment, pending the Supreme Court's decision on Trump's claim of presidential immunity, which makes the Stormy Daniels hush money case the only one likely to be tried before November's election. As the former president prepares to go to trial, he's also celebrating a victory in a different case today, that New York civil fraud trial. An appeals court today throwing Donald Trump a lifeline, reducing that massive $464 million bond by more than half. He now has 10 days to pay $175 million, which means that Trump for now will not have to sell nor worry about authorities seizing his properties or, as he referred to them today, his babies. CNN's Paula Reed is out front, live outside the New York City courthouse. So, Paula, all in all, a good day in some respects for Donald Trump, if we look at that figure at least.
Yeah, I think it was overall a good day, Erica. He had that bond reduced, and today was supposed to be the first day of his first criminal trial, and he still has not faced a criminal prosecution yet, even though one is now once again on the calendar. So overall a good day, but even by Trump standards, today was dramatic. Trump was in the courthouse right behind me when he found out that a different court, the Court of Appeals, had dramatically lowered that bond that he was struggling to pay. Now, he later said that he will now be able to post that bond since it has been reduced, and that will stave off enforcement of that civil fraud case until later this year. But Erica, he was not able to stave off this first criminal case, the judge saying that jury selection will begin in 3 weeks. Now, this case is expected to last around 6 weeks. It'll go 4 days a week with Wednesdays off, and Trump is required to attend. That's going to stretch into the heart of campaign season. So we expect that Trump is going to try to turn this into a campaign event, continuing to try to paint himself as a victim of an unfair or corrupt system. But it's interesting today to watch the judge, Judge Juan Merchan, who'll be overseeing this case. He made it pretty clear that any sort of political stunts need to stop at the courtroom door. Because one of the reasons that we were in court today, not to begin the trial, but to have a hearing, is because Trump's lawyers had accused the district attorney's office of prosecutorial misconduct, something the judge said was extremely serious and significant, accusing them of withholding documents, working with federal investigators to withhold documents from the Trump team. But under questioning from the judge, it was clear the Trump team really didn't have anything to support that. And the judge was clearly angry. He raised his voice and said, I cannot believe that you don't have a single citation. No case law, no evidence to support this accusation. It was clearly a shot across the bow, a warning not to try to score political points by making baseless attacks in this courtroom. But Erica, as we've seen in the other two Trump trials that we've covered here in New York over the past few months, Trump can't help himself, and often his lawyers cannot either. So this is going to be a challenge not only for the former president, but also for this judge. How do you rein this in? It will certainly be a campaign season unlike any other.
That is, yes, indeed it will. That's for sure. Paula, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it. Out front now, Eric Larson, legal reporter for Bloomberg News, and Ryan Goodman, our out front legal analyst. So, Ryan, let's start with just sort of a couple of practical questions as we move into this. The fact that this is supposed to start on April 15th, jury selection is supposed to start then. What's the over-under on that? Do you believe we're actually going to see this trial start April 15th?
I think so, and I think the judge thinks so as well. One of his parting words to everybody in the courtroom was, see you on the 15th. Even though the Trump attorneys did say they're going to try one more last-ditch effort to say that they want to postpone it, it doesn't look like it's going to be postponed. I think we're going to all be here together on Tax Day, April 15th, when they open for jury selection.
Tax Day, also Patriots Day in Massachusetts. Very important for the marathon. Donald Trump said today he would testify. This is not the first time that we've heard that from Donald Trump. If you're his attorney, Ryan, would you put the former president on the stand?
I would advise him mightily not to do that, because generally speaking, defendants do not go on the stand. But he's not a very good witness, or he wouldn't be a very good witness in the box. He seemed a bit out of control when he was in the deposition for E. Jean Carroll, as one example. There's actually an adverse finding against him in the civil fraud trial when he did testify, saying that he wasn't credible. Mm-hmm. So the idea that he would go forward in this trial, I don't think is a good idea. And if anything, it could actually cement some of the evidence that the prosecutors need to prove and might have difficulty proving without his testimony. So I think he would even hand them something.
Eric, you have followed so much of this so closely. You've spent a whole lot of time in courtrooms covering Donald Trump. The fact that this judge today was so clearly irritated and really called out Donald Trump's legal team, right, that they couldn't cite case law, they didn't have anything essentially to back up these very serious allegations. Based on what you've seen from Donald Trump's legal team, does it surprise you that they got to that moment in the courtroom where the judge said, you really should have been better prepared here?
No, it really doesn't surprise me, only because we've seen this sort of thing happen in the earlier trials that we've had so far with the E. Jean Carroll defamation case, the New York Attorney General case, his lawyers clashing with the judges at times, especially when Trump has been on the witness stand. So it actually is not too surprising. His lawyers like to show him that they're earning their money by making these arguments. They made a big deal last week about saying that this evidence had been handed over too late. Why had this happened? The judge today said to them, when did you request this evidence? When did you subpoena it? Why didn't you do it months ago? The implication sort of being that this delay strategy might have been intentional, or at least that they were at fault. And the judge obviously shot it down.
Part of that in shooting it down, too, is also calling out one of Donald Trump's attorneys, saying, hey, you're a former federal prosecutor. And I'm obviously paraphrasing here. And this is how you're presenting things. And this is the work you've done. That, I think, says a lot and also raises questions for people about what can we expect from this judge at trial?
It's a great question. And just to put the record straight, and like the judge already had a trial. He was the judge in the Trump Organization criminal trial and widely respected for the way in which he manages the courtroom. And in fact, Alan Weisselberg, Trump's former CFO, said of Judge Merchan that he showed them the utmost respect, understood their role as advocates. So this is a judge who is even-keeled, doesn't lose it in any sense. And here he was obviously quite upset very much with the lawyers and how they were making claims that were outrageous in a certain sense, needed to be supported because of how exceptionally they were criticizing the prosecutors. Basically saying the prosecutors are engaged in a conspiracy of hiding evidence from them without any support. So I think this is a remarkable setting of the table for the trial by the judge, who's well-respected for being able to control this room.
Ryan, Eric, stay with us. I also want to bring in now, we have Mimi Rocha, who's with us, the DA in Westchester County, New York, also former division chief for the SDNY. And Mimi, you know Todd Blanche very well. You worked together. Was it surprising at all to you to see your former colleague called out in that way?
Well, I think it was appropriate. As Ryan, I think, explained, the defense here went beyond just saying, hey, we got a lot of documents and we need time to go through them, which, of course, is an appropriate argument. And prosecutors always should be as transparent as possible and turn things over. But he really, the defense team, really accused, I think unfairly, based on what the judge said today, the prosecutors of misconduct. And that's so serious. I mean, for any lawyer, but particularly prosecutors. And to throw that around in a way that, according to the judge, was not warranted. This judge, who really calls balls and strikes, said, in fact, I think the DA's office here seems to have gone above and beyond. In other words, they not only fulfilled their obligations under the law, but they went beyond that. And so I was not surprised in that sense, because I think that is part of a judge's job, is to sort of, you know, police, if you will, the rhetoric and accusations that get thrown around in heated cases like this.
I mean, I'm going to stick with you for a minute, because I want to get your take, too, on what we saw from the appeals court today. So reducing this judgment to $175 million for that bond. I also found it interesting that the order basically said that there had been an order barring Donald Trump and his sons from running a business in New York, also from obtaining a loan from a financial institution in the state of New York. They put a pause on that. Was that surprising at all to you, that stay?
I mean, no, in the sense that appeals courts do, in general, things to preserve the status quo as much as possible until the merits of a case are ruled on. I mean, probably everyone who's been following these cases knows that by now, because we've seen that in other cases as well. But that's kind of a tried and true principle of appellate courts, to preserve the status quo as much as possible. And because once there is harm, once there to a party, it's harder, you can't undo it. And so they try to sort of hold things in place. And I'm obviously don't know why they did what they did, but I know it is consistent with that principle of appellate courts.
There's been some talk about the number, too, that we got to. So it was $464 million, this bond, reduced to $175 million, which means that it is unlikely Donald Trump will have to sell any of his properties, that anything will need to be seized. A 60% reduction from the appeals court. Did that surprise you?
It surprised me a little bit, and it's now we're trying to read the tea leaves of what that might mean on the part of the appeals court. So it might mean
they didn't give us much information. It was about a paragraph.
Yes, there's no accompanying opinion. So it's just they told us how they ruled. And I think that it could be that they are a bit skeptical of Judge Engeren's ruling in terms of how much he found that needs to be disgorged from Trump's companies. So it's not about the underlying ruling of systematic fraud, but it might be that the scope, the $464 million, might be to them too high. So it's better to just choose a lower number going into the appeals process.
Eric, could that be seen as a setback for the AG?
It's definitely a setback for the Attorney General today. This is not what they wanted to have happen. They had told the appeals court that if Trump was not forced to post the entire bond, that there was a risk that he wouldn't pay the award if his appeal failed, that he just simply could not be trusted. And they were very adamant about that. They wanted 120% of the judgment put up front in order for him to appeal. So it is a big setback for the Attorney General. I think they probably are perhaps making peace with it and ready to move on. But it also remains to be seen whether Trump will actually post the bond. He did say he will, but he also has to follow through on that, and he has 10 days to do so.
Well, I know we're all waiting for the next 10 days, so we'll be watching for that. Eric, Ryan, Mimi, really appreciate all being with us tonight. Thank you. Yeah. Out front next, Trump claiming his mounting legal fees are hurting now his re-election chances.
I would also like to be able to use some of my cash to get elected.
Which is interesting because it's been a while since Donald Trump used his own money to get elected. Plus, breaking news, Homeland Security raiding the homes of Sean Diddy Combs in California and Florida. We have new details about this investigation just coming in here. And RFK Jr. flirting with the Libertarian Party, now meeting with the chair of the organization. Could that be his ticket to make sure he gets on the ballot in dozens of states?
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
New tonight, Donald Trump baselessly claiming the money he owes in the Trump org fraud case is part of a plot to hurt his presidential election campaign.
I have a lot of cash. You know I do because you looked at my statements. I mean, you've been examining my statements for a long time, and I have much more than that in cash. But I would also like to be able to use some of my cash to get elected. They don't want me to use my cash to get elected. They don't want that.
Out front now, David Urban, former senior advisor to the Trump campaign, and Karen Finney, former senior spokesperson for Hillary Clinton's campaign. Nice to see you both tonight. So, David, the last time that Donald Trump actually used his own money for his campaign was all the way back in 2016. It was far less than he had promised. Not surprisingly, he began fundraising off of today's developments almost immediately, calling this bond reduction a huge victory, but also warning now is not the time to celebrate. He has to use some of his own money for that bond, right? But that's not just a hit to his bank account, David. It's also a hit, isn't it, to his ego?
Yeah, I would say, you know, Erica, look, this is the Trump organization, you know, is the crown jewels. This is what Donald Trump created. He created Trump Tower, all these properties, Mar-a-Lago, and Letitia James going after this is really, really kind of, I don't want to say angers the president, but it angers him. He sees that this is a fraud with no fraud. And so it really does make him angry.
So as that makes him angry, I found it interesting, Karen, that the Biden campaign was really quick to weigh in today, calling Donald Trump, quote, weak and desperate, both as a man and as a candidate for president. So Trump has repeatedly invoked Biden's name when he talks about his legal troubles, claiming without evidence that the president is somehow calling the shots here, even when it comes to state cases. Karen, would you have advised the Biden campaign to jump on this? Or is it better to stay away, especially given how Donald Trump likes to connect Joe Biden to his legal issues?
Yeah. You know, I think they took the opportunity today because it does, as you pointed out, it cuts to the very heart of who Donald Trump believes that he is and the image of himself that he has built over many decades. It also, his statements today, he did sound weak because he sounded like he was actually affirming the charge in the case, which was he overinflated his investments. Therefore, he does not actually have the money and he is not interested in spending any of his own money. So I would say that, you know, normally with someone like Trump, you would want to be mindful of how often you're going to let yourself get drug in. But I think they took this opportunity today because, again, it was a cut at exactly what we've been seeing unfold. And, you know, the fact that many people do think he's a fraud and do think that, you know, look, if you have the money, just go ahead and pay for it. Don't whine about it.
There's been a lot of questions about where the money would come from over the last several days. Of course, that really came to a head last week. And then with this ruling from the appeals court made it a little easier. But David, Donald Trump was asked specifically this afternoon whether he would accept money from a foreign government or for his bond or other legal fees. I want to play that exchange for you.
Accept money from a foreign government to pay the bond or their fines or
no? I don't do that. I think you'd be allowed to possibly. I don't know. I mean, if you go borrow from a big bank, many of the banks are outside of this. As you know, the biggest banks, frankly, are outside of our country. So you could do that, but I don't need to borrow money. I have a lot of money.
To be clear, the question wasn't about a bank. The question was specifically, would you ever accept money from a foreign government to pay the bond or your fines or any of your legal bills? His attorney telling CNN last week that he would not take money from a foreign government. Do you believe, David, that is really off the table?
Yeah, well, clearly. You heard the former president there say, no, I wouldn't do it. And he talked about how most of the big banks are outside. I'm sure his mind skipped immediately to Deutsche Bank, where he did lots of business in the past. So he clearly took it off the table. It's not going to happen. Everybody can relax. President Trump is not going to be borrowing money from some foreign country as many people. You know, what if he borrows money to pay the debt? Then they'll be on the hook. What if he borrows money? He's not going to do it. He said he's not going to do it. There's a meme going around now on social media where he says, how are you going to post the bond? And he says, cash, right? And so let's see what happens in 10 days.
How many days are you putting on this? How long do you think until he pays up, David?
How many days till he's got 10 days till he has to post it? Is that what?
I know how many days he has. What I'm saying is, when do you think? Yeah. Do you think it'll be the 10th? Because if the cash is there, why not just check this box? It's done.
I think it'll be day 10.
Okay, Karen. When you look at all this, some of the concerns that people were raising about potentially, foreign money, were concerns about if he becomes president again, could there be a national security issue? Again, his attorney saying no. We heard Donald Trump say there. Do you believe it's fully off the table?
No, I don't. Because that answer sounded like Trump speak for, well, maybe, because he said, well, no, but I could. You could, because the big bank, that's that kind of permission structure he tends to grant himself after he'll say one thing and then kind of open the door. Look, I think regardless, there will be open questions. It is a national security risk for someone to be this much in debt. But I think it opens the question between now and Election Day, who and where will he get the money? And even if it's not foreign dollars, who in this country is he? What group of donors will help to put up the money, and what will they expect for those dollars? And that is a very legitimate question that will be asked between now and Election Day.
Karen Finney, David Urban, always good to see you both.
Come on, Karen. I'm just gonna say, like, if you're gonna talk about donors, then the same goes true for Joe Biden, who's out begging for money in Hollywood, begging for money in New York, begging for money in Silicon Valley. Same holds true there.
Money and politics. Well, what a marriage. Thank you both. Good to see you. Out front next, we do have this breaking news that we want to share with you. Live pictures out of Miami, where federal agents are raiding the home of hip-hop mogul Sean Diddy Combs. And we have new details this hour about what Homeland Security may be searching for. Plus, Putin responding tonight to the terror attack at a concert hall, using that bloody assault to justify his assault on Ukraine. Breaking news, federal agents raiding two homes belonging to music mogul Sean Diddy Combs. The raids are being carried out simultaneously. So these are pictures actually out of Los Angeles. I believe those might be live pictures. And then we also have pictures of what's happening outside of his home in Miami Beach. Both of those being searched. We're told both raids are being conducted by the Department of Homeland Security. Josh Campbell is out front. So Josh, what more do we know about what these federal agents are actually looking for?
Yeah, Erica, in that first video that we just showed there in Los Angeles, there's a key tell there, and that is the agency that is leading the investigation in this raid. As you mentioned, this is the Department of Homeland Security's Homeland Security Investigation Agency, which, if people aren't familiar with, they are a primary investigative arm of DHS, typically involved in transnational criminal issues, but they also have significant experience and work with a lot of effort towards countering human trafficking. And so, again, we specifically don't know what the criminal violation or potential criminal violation is at play here, but the very fact that it is HSI that is leading this investigation gives us some indication. Otherwise, we would see, perhaps the FBI or IRS and other agencies. Now, we did get a statement in just a short time ago from HSI confirming their involvement at both of these residences. I'll read you part of that statement. They say that earlier today, HSI New York executed law enforcement actions as part of an ongoing investigation with assistance from HSI LA, HSI Miami, and our local law enforcement partners. It appears, Erica, that these two law enforcement actions happened simultaneously. You can imagine the amount of coordination that would go into that from coast to coast with federal agents proceeding to descend on these particular locations. Now, right now, no indication that Combs himself is a specific target or subject of the investigation, but serious breaking news today. Federal agents on his property now, and at least according to these aerials, it appears that they will be there for quite some time. This looks, just you know, from my background in law enforcement, as though this is a search warrant execution that is likely at play here, just with the number of personnel, how they're set up. Of course, we'll wait and see the key reason they're there, Erica.
And this is really, you know, for a lot of people, this is jumping to the top of their headlines at this hour because there have been several legal issues that Sean Combs has faced in recent months.
No, exactly. I mean, if you go back and look just in last November, he was sued for rape and abuse by a former partner. Now, both parties quickly settled that that civil lawsuit after it was filed. But then in December, he faced sexual assault allegations that, according to a complaint that was filed in the Southern District of New York. It was a suit brought by a woman who was known just as Jane Doe in court documents, who said that she was 17 at the time of the alleged assault back in 2003. Now, Combs, of course, has vehemently denied any allegation. But as you look at some of the past allegations, particularly indicating, you know, alleged sex trafficking, again, we're not connecting the dots yet between the raids and that activity, but just at least the wave of those allegations now seeing this particular federal agency, the lead here, does give us some indication of where this is possibly leading.
Yeah. All right, Josh, we know you'll stay on it and bring us any updates as they come in. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure.
Also tonight, Vladimir Putin claiming without evidence that Ukraine was involved in the Moscow terrorist attack that left at least 139 dead. Putin is finally acknowledging that, quote, radical Islamists carried out that attack 3 days after the terror group ISIS claimed responsibility. This also comes after the men allegedly behind that attack arrived in a Russian court heavily bruised, bandaged, bloodied, one of them in a wheelchair, appearing unconscious. This is images on social media also appear to show some of the men being tortured. Fred Plykin is out front.
As search and rescue crews sift through the charred remains of the concert hall, outside, a sea of flowers continues to grow as thousands mourn the victims of the worst terror attack to hit Russia in decades. No one should remain indifferent in such moments, this woman says. We must honor their memory and understand we are all facing this tragedy. I say tears flow, but we're all here together. Eyewitness videos show the brutality as the attackers swept the Crocus City Hall entertainment complex. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack. The terror group released this video through the ISIS-affiliated Amaq news agency, allegedly filmed by the attackers themselves as they killed more than 130 people. Also setting the building on fire, leading to a massive blaze that caused the roof to partially collapse. The U.S. says it has no reason to doubt ISIS's claim, and Russia has been at war with the group during Moscow's brutal aerial campaign in Syria supporting the Assad regime. I traveled to Deir ez-Zor in eastern Syria with the Russian military in 2017 as the battle raged.
Even though the Syrian and Russian armies have managed to push ISIS back, there still are a lot of ISIS fighters here in this area. That's why taking the helicopter is the safest way to get to Deir ez-Zor.
The alleged gunmen, all of them from Tajikistan, are now in Russian custody. Three of them pleaded guilty in a Moscow court this weekend. But the Russians still won't acknowledge an ISIS link, Vladimir Putin instead claiming the attackers had ties to Ukraine.
We know that the crime was committed by the hands of radical Islamists, followers of the ideology that the Islamic world itself has been fighting against for centuries. Of course, it is necessary to answer the question why, after committing the crime, the terrorists tried to go to Ukraine.
The suspects bore signs of abuse as they were arraigned, one seemingly semi-conscious in a wheelchair. And this video on social media seems to show Russian security services mistreating another one of the men. When confronted with questions about possible torture of the detainees, the Kremlin refusing to reply. No, the spokesman said, I leave this question without an answer.
And Erica, a Russian court ordered three additional people placed under arrest today. One of them is the former owner of the car that the alleged attackers used to try and make a getaway. And of course, the Russians continue to claim they were heading towards Ukraine. Erica?
Fred Plykin with the latest for us tonight. Fred, thank you. Out front now, Russian investigative journalists Andrei Soldatov and Seth Jones. He's senior vice president at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. It's good to see both of you. So, Andrei, following these attacks and now these really graphic images of the suspects, how is all that landing for the Russian people? I see Putin trying to show some strength in those moments. Is that the message that they're getting?
Certainly it is. The problem is that there is a general feeling of xenophobia towards Central Asian migrants in Russian society, which has been cultivated for quite some time by the Russian authorities, and which means that a lot of people do not believe that people from Central Asia actually are capable of organizing such an attack. And there is also a general feeling of mistrust, which is a fertile ground for all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories. Putin knows how to play this game. He knows how to use these feelings. So now he is turning the intelligence failure into an ammunition to attack the West and attack Ukraine.
The fact that he finally acknowledged, Seth, that radical Islamists were actually behind this attack was interesting, but he went on to continue claiming with no evidence that Ukraine was still somehow involved. You've noted that Russia is actually a top target for ISIS. Why is that?
Well, there are several reasons why. One is that starting in 2015, the Russians were involved directly in the war in Syria, backing the Assad regime against a range of militant groups. One of them was ISIS. So over the course of 2016, frankly, through today, they've been involved in attacks against ISIS in Syria. But we've also seen just because of you know, the Russians have conducted attacks. ISIS has conducted attacks against Russia, the U.S. and all major governments in the region just because they consider these kinds of governments infidel. So we saw it in 2022. ISIS Khorasan conduct a major attack against the Russian embassy in Kabul. So they've been a target as an infidel regime for years.
When we look at how this is playing out inside Russia, I think it's really important to show what we're seeing from Russian state media, which is, of course, following Putin's lead. I want to play just a little bit of what folks are saying at this moment.
It's set up in a very simple way nowadays. It's Ukraine. Ukraine is a proxy force of American and British military and intelligence services. Does anyone have any doubt as to who did this?
So, Andre, you know, there's this grip on the narrative that we were just talking about that Vladimir Putin has. There's been a significant crackdown on dissent in outside media, of course, since Russia invaded Ukraine. You talk about the narrative that had been there in terms of Central Asia. What about this persistent narrative of it's all ill sort of stem from Ukraine and the United States?
Well, it should be part of a broader narrative for the Kremlin that Russia is a besieged fortress, which has been under attack from the West for many, many years. And Putin today mentioned that this attack started at least in 2014, basically claiming that the revolution in Kyiv was part of this conspiracy against Russia. Unfortunately, because of all this propaganda, lots of people in the country believe that and would accept that.
When we look at what is happening here, Seth, this ISIS offshoot known as ISIS-K pulled off the attack. What are you hearing about their other ambitions, their capabilities to conduct additional attacks like this, perhaps in Western capitals?
Yeah, and let's just say there is no evidence, zero, zilch, that Ukraine has been involved in any way, shape, or form along these lines. In fact, quite the opposite. But what we have seen is ISIS Khorasan, which looks like the number of attacks in Afghanistan, that's where it's based, has come down somewhat over the last year. But we've seen plotting in Germany, and we've seen plotting in France and the Netherlands and a range of other European countries as well. There were huge arrests last year in a joint German-Dutch operation in response to this major plot in Germany. So they've got ambitions. They've got also ambitions against the United States. And we've heard the head of U.S. Central Command say this within the past few days, that the U.S. is also a major target, primarily overseas.
Seth, Andre, really appreciate having you both of us with us tonight. And thanks for your perspective and your insight.
Thanks, Erica.
Out front next, Elon Musk's Starlink technology has been crucial for Ukraine in this war. Now it's being used by Russia, and Ukraine is taking action. Plus, it was meant to save lives, but a controversial drug treatment program ended up turning into something of a cult.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. Join me, Philip Nguyen, a scholar of Vietnamese-American culture, and the cast and crew as we discuss the making of this historic series. Subscribe now to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and stream HBO's The Sympathizer starting April 14th exclusively on Max.
Tonight, new video into CNN from the front lines in Ukraine. A Ukrainian drone targets and destroys a Russian tank. Ukraine is relying heavily on drone warfare as it tries to push Russia back. Those drones also rely on Elon Musk's Starlink internet technology, technology that is also now in Russian hands, giving their troops an advantage on the battlefield. Nick Payton Walsh is out front.
Ukraine's newest target is something they've long cherished themselves. Small, white, rectangular satellite internet terminals from Elon Musk's Starlink, apparently in Russian hands, and hit by Ukrainian drones. They're not supposed to be there at all, according to Musk and US sanctions. Here, a Russian soldier explains frontline damage to one of their Starlink units, connecting attack drones and command centers.
Antenna для спутникового интернета Starlink.
While Russia has officially denied their use, their army of crowdfunders openly flaunt Starlink purchases in third countries. Here is one key supplier showing off store-bought drones and five Starlinks too. The look on their faces does not suggest they're too confident in coming home. She has posted other images of Starlinks and drones bought. Ukrainian troops we met across the east and south of the front line said Russia has near copied their system of attack drones, using Starlink's internet signal to control dozens of single-use first-person view devices to swarm Ukrainian positions. Here is even an intercepted signal one unit told us they had hacked from a Russian drone. You can see it maneuvering into a Ukrainian target. Near the heavily contested village of Robotyne, down in the bunkers where the drone wars are fought, this change is huge and has come with an apparent complication for the Ukrainians too. Their Starlink speeds have been getting slower, said this commander.
До нового року було скорость, швидкість набагато швидше, а зараз десь раза в два. Мені попадалась інформація про те, що росіяни через нейтральні країни купили партію Starlinkів і використовують її на Запорізькому напрямку для своїх цілей.
Another operator in the same area reported problems in the last month.
То, що серйозно прям почали замічати, просідає скорость зв'язі, постійно обривається, постійно потрібно перезагружати Starlinkи, щоб вони почали нормально працювати. Но со временем скорость начинает обратно проседать, снова обрываться.
И это мешает вашей работе?
Ну, конечно, это приносит довольно-таки неприятные сложности.
9000 active space lasers. So, sort of vaguely reminds me of Dr. Evil.
A lot rests on Musk. While Ukrainian officials went public with their concerns 6 weeks ago, they've since gone silent. They're perhaps quietly pressuring Musk, who experts think can vet who uses terminals, even if that's trickier in contested areas.
It's possible SpaceX can pinpoint each terminal and they know who is who, but the problem is to identify actual owner of the account. Musk is a big child, so it's important to talk to him and don't offend him here, because he might do some quick decisions that might be not very good for everyone.
Musk's SpaceX and Starlink did not respond to requests for comment. They said previously they do no business with the Russian state or military, and if a sanctioned party uses Starlink, we investigate the claim and take action to deactivate the terminal if confirmed. But as Ukraine's other lifelines wobble or dry up, space-based internet is one they cannot afford to see slow, lose to the Russians, or lose at all. Nick Payton Walsh, CNN, London.
Out front next, an incredible look tonight at how a controversial drug treatment center ended up turning into a cult-like community. The director of this new documentary is next. Plus, RFK Jr. making moves that could boost his chances of getting on the ballot nationwide. Out front now is Rory Kennedy, director and executive producer of HBO's The Sin and On Fix. It's good to have you tonight. I have to say, I watched the first episode earlier today, and these opening scenes are so jarring. It's this sort of group therapy that evolved into this violent, harsh, it was yelling. What prompted you to want to tell this story? It's so engaging.
Well, thank you. Thank you for watching, and thank you for having me on the show. I thought this was just an incredible story, and I was shocked that nobody really knew about it. You know, this is it was really the first drug treatment program in the United States. It was helping heroin addicts in Santa Monica in 1958, very marginalized community. There's lots of stigma with these drug addicts. Chuck Diedrich welcomed them in. And he had this innovative program where they did this kind of confrontational therapy where people could scream at each other and call each other out. And they loved it. And it was very effective. It got drug users off the street. It got them to stop using. It was incredibly visionary. And, you know, over time, with power and money, it evolved into, as you showed in the clip there, what many consider to be a cult.
Yeah, it was. I hadn't heard of it until watching this, and I was really struck by it. One of the people that you spoke to for the documentary is Chuck Diedrich's daughter, who actually helped her father collect money for the group. I just want to play a little bit of what she told you.
It was terrible. Yeah, it was terrible. People suffered. People were hurt. And he did bring Sin and On down around him. But all of us in Sin and On, he couldn't have done it without us enabling him.
She talks about the enabling. I mean, people did initially come in for help. And then at one point, as this evolved, it seemed like it was really tough for them to leave. How did Chuck end up with so much power over them?
I mean, I really encourage folks to watch the series because it's so nuanced and complex, and it didn't happen in just one instance, and I really don't think it was the initial intention of the organization. I think that Chuck was somebody who had his own limitations, and he was a former alcoholic. He led this organization, and I think, you know, like many alcoholics who are in families, they go back to drinking and there's massive dysfunction. And as one of the characters says in the film, he just had a much bigger family to impact. Mm. So it's hard to know exactly what was the moment where it switched. It kind of evolved where there were mandates and they started shaving their heads. Initially, it was not eating sugar and going on diets, and then it was head shaving, and then it led to, you know, more extreme behavior like forced abortions and vasectomies and swapping partners. But it happened over years, and I think, you know, what's fascinating to me is interviewing the people who live through it, mm-hmm. and getting their perspective of how they came to make sense of these changes. I mean, this is an organization that was founded on two principles. One was no drugs and alcohol, and the other was no violence. And by the end, it had bought more firearms than anybody in the history of California, and they had an open bar in the facility. So how it goes from one extreme to this other extreme and how the folks who lived through it made sense of that,
yeah,
is a fascinating story.
It certainly is. I do want to ask you about your brother, Robert Kennedy, who is running for president. I know you do not support his campaign. You've called it dangerous. A CNN poll from just last week in the key state of Michigan found more than half of voters have an unfavorable opinion of both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. We know there's voter fatigue with these two candidates. When you say you see your brother's campaign as a danger, is it more about siphoning votes away from Joe Biden, or is it because of his policies?
It's really about siphoning votes from Biden. You know, the polls I'm seeing, Bobby takes 70% of the votes from Biden and 30% from Trump. And I feel strongly that this is the most important election of our lifetime, and there's so much at stake, and I do think it's going to come down to a handful of votes mm-hmm. in a handful of states. And I do worry that Bobby just taking some percentage of votes from Biden could shift the election and lead to Trump's election.
Rory Kennedy, appreciate you being with us tonight. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You can catch the HBO original documentary series, The Sinan on Fix. It debuts Monday, April 1st at 9 p.m. Eastern on HBO Max. Thanks for joining us. AC360 starts right now.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.